For me, my brain is soaking up everything all at once. Like, it's really like not possible for me to do that.
Okay.
And so I can become, depending upon a situation, I could become really overstimulated, even
Gotcha.
when it's a good situation. And then later on, that can have a toll on the way that I perform at work. So I have to really learn to balance what type of stimulation I expose myself to, because it could be either really beneficial for me and be energizing, or it could be really draining because I'm not capable of, let's say, I'm not capable of making that information less relevant. Everything then starts going through my head.
That's Fabiola Budiger-Dadiz, founder of NeuroReality, a medtech company focused on developing virtual reality-based cognitive telerehabilitation software for individuals with acquired brain injuries. In this episode, we dive into what it's like being a startup founder with autism, some fun stories for when she used to be a model, how she got NeuroReality to market, and the most interesting thing she has done in the past 26 days. I'd love to hear your thoughts about this. As you listen, you can find me on LinkedIn under Eric Melcher. Tag me, say hello, let me know that you're listening. And now let's talk with Fabiola. Fabiola, I am so curious because you've lived in 9 countries, which means you probably have more passport stamps than most people have Instagram followers. So the question is, what's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten in one of those 9 countries? And has it become a favorite dish, or is it something that you hope to never eat again?
Okay, so that is an interesting question. I lived in Shanghai for almost 3 years, and I traveled a lot around mainland China as well. This was when I was a model, so in a past life. And generally, it's really typical for your client to do something very nice for you after a job. It's like customary in the Asian culture. So they thought that they were doing, like, I'm pescatarian or flexitarian. I'm not sure how you want to call it, but I don't eat meat. And I sitting there with my friend who's a vegan. And they bring out this huge, huge, huge serving and platter of all different turtle dishes. Because we were in this town that was supposedly known for turtle being like a delicacy.
Okay.
And so there we were like, okay, we can't be rude. Our agent was there and was like, you have to at least try some of it, you know? Like, so I had turtle rib, which I know it sounds terrible. It was actually really good, but I will not be eating them again. I do not plan to seek this experience out again.
What was the closest thing that they tasted like?
It was actually almost like duck. It was kind of like fatty and almost had like a poultry similar taste to it, but really tiny little ribs, like really little baby ribs that make you're like feeling like, yeah. Oh my God, this is terrible that I'm doing this right now, but it's okay. It tastes good.
How long did you have that client afterwards? For a long time or just
no, no, it was just a one-off job. I can't remember what photo shoot it was for actually, but okay. It was definitely an experience and a half.
Hey, for a one-off job, maybe you could have, said, no, thanks. I'll pass if it was a one-off job, right?
I don't know. It's such, so they call it guanxi, and it's such a part of like the culture there is like going out and having drinks and schmoozing with your clients, like regardless. So I don't think that my agent would have let me out of it, even if I would have been like, hey, peace out. I'm done with this.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I mean, you know what? Try everything once, I guess. I don't think I would ever eat certain things. For example, dog. But there's a limit. Aside from that, I'm open.
Okay. All right. Turtles, huh? All right. Next question for you. Many entrepreneurs, they struggle with, it could be work-life balance. It could be imposter syndrome. But people with autism, they may face additional hurdles, or they may have superpowers like having an eye for detail or maybe like this incredible memory. So I was wondering if you can share what it's like being a founder with autism.
Absolutely. And you sort of like, you hit the I always forget it. It's the nail with the hammer, isn't it?
The nail on the head.
It's the one we're looking for. And there are challenges just being a startup entrepreneur, founder in general, period, that we all go through. And then there are additional challenges of having autism. So For me, the challenges, and then like you said, there's superpowers too. So I'll get into that in a second. The challenges that I really notice for me is to filter external information. My brain doesn't have the capacity that we call people that don't have these types of abnormalities, neurotypical. So I don't have the same brain structure as a neurotypical individual. My frontal cortex, which is the part of our brain that is sort of responsible for higher reasoning and decision-making, et cetera. And then it's also this relay center for a lot of complex information and neural networks in our brain. My brain isn't capable of suppressing information. So, you know, that sort of like cocktail room paradigm where everyone's talking around you and you're trying to focus just on that one person instead of the conversations happening around you. Mm-hmm. For me, my brain is soaking up everything all at once. Like, it's really like not possible for me to do that.
Okay.
And so I can become, depending upon a situation, I could become really overstimulated, even when it's a good situation. And then later on, that can have a toll on the way that I perform at work. So I have to really learn to balance what type of stimulation I expose myself to, because it could be either really beneficial for me and be energizing, or it could be really draining because I'm not capable of, let's say, I'm not capable of making that information less relevant. Everything then starts going through my head. That's also a big plus. Like you said, I'm incredibly detail oriented, so I'm noticing everything all at once. Another really big plus is that because I have my niche interests, I am incredibly focused. So when I'm working and as a neuroscientist, as a founder, I am totally able to go for 13 hours straight with no break, which is not healthy at all. I do not recommend this, guys and girls.
I like
those
myself. I like when there's like no interruptions, no distraction.
Right?
I can work easily 13, 14 hours straight. And I enjoy those moments, actually.
I think it's great when you get in that flow state. For me, it's a little bit more like a, like you said, it comes in with imposter syndrome too. That's the side of it too, because you're like, okay, well, am I doing enough? Am I good enough? Are people going to think that it's strange? That's another big one. Do people think that it's strange that I have autism in the business world? Is that something that I talk about when people find out? I'm an advocate, so I am very open about this. It's actually Autism Awareness Month, right? But I don't think that there's anything wrong with having a disability, because it can be a super ability as well, as we talked about a little bit. There's so much more, of course, but that's sort of it in a nutshell, especially with regards to my life as an entrepreneur.
After a quick break, Fabiola shares her inspiration for creating Neural Reality, who it's designed for, and how it works.
Hey, in case you didn't know, the Innovators Can Laugh newsletter comes out every Thursday. You find out which startup founders are coming on the show, along with links to posts I found interesting on the web, my best dad jokes, quotes from Napoleon to Chris Rock, and my thoughts and strategies on what I am doing to live a rich life filled with happiness as a Texas expat living in Europe. Sign up for the newsletter at innovatorscanlaugh.com.
Welcome back to my conversation with Fabiola. I am fascinated by her background. After all, you don't meet that many models turned scientists. That said, let's hear what Neural Reality is all about and what inspired her to create it. Well, let's jump into your startup, Neural Reality. Tell us about what it is and why. What inspired you to create it?
Oh my gosh. And we've only got such a short time. So Neural Reality is a company I founded in 2017 in Amsterdam, based here in Amsterdam. And even though you said I've lived in 9 countries and I have 3 passports, by the way, and Dutch citizenship, so definitely got some good stamps in there. I decided that the Netherlands, where I spent my formative years, was where I was going to settle, at least for now. I love traveling. And I did my master's in neuroscience at the University of Oxford, and came back here to the Netherlands again with this idea of a telehealth solution that would be using VR and gamification and neuroscience to treat and monitor acquired brain injuries. And then also to develop an AI-based diagnostic tool once we've collected enough data. So in 2017, this was crazy. This was before the advent of the metaverse, or before, you know, pre-COVID, and remote learning wasn't really a big thing. Remote healthcare wasn't a big thing.
Right.
And certainly we weren't utilizing virtual reality. We were beginning to, I think, in a very rudimentary way, but we weren't really using virtual reality for medical purposes. We were moreover using AR for surgical training or these types of applications. But what we do at NeuroReality is we've created a software suite that includes science-based cognitive rehabilitation games. So oftentimes when you are experiencing something like a brain injury, not only are you physically debilitated in certain instances, but you're cognitively also going to experience a lot of issues. And what that means is problems with your memory, problems with your attention and focus and higher reasoning and decision-making and things that I talked about a little bit before. But depending upon where someone experienced the injury in their brain, it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. So we had to really think about that in designing the software as well. There's 6 different cognitive training games, and each one of those utilizes the dynamic difficulty progression in order to calibrate for the individual to see what's most appropriate level for them to be at. And everyone has good and bad days, so the software can adjust depending upon whether or not you're progressing very quickly or if you're having trouble. So again, because it's such a unique population with so many different facets, an acquired brain injury could be someone that had a car accident, could be a stroke, could be someone that has a brain tumor. So we're talking about this huge spectrum of patients that have a wide array of problems. Then what we have, what I really like, is a virtual companion, and his name is Koji. And Koji is your buddy throughout the game and facilitates the ability for you to play basically alone. He shows you all the actions that you need to take. And we're going to later on do a study because there's principles about the mirror neuron system. Do you know what that is, Eric?
No, I don't.
Okay, so that's the monkey see, monkey do system.
Okay.
And we know that that's present in other primates, but we haven't really identified it in humans. But we do know that we learn via observation.
Oh, yeah.
And we do believe that we have this mirror neuron system too. So even just by watching Koji perform the task, there's a great chance that you're also not, well, you're not only learning how to do the task yourself, but that your neural networks are being activated to a point that you may even induce further neuroplasticity. Now, that's a big stretch. Any scientists who are listening to this are going to be like, you need to show me some tests about this. But that's the idea. And later on, we will indeed do some fMRI tests and MRI tests in order to see if that's possible. We have a reward system to keep individuals excited and engaged and motivated to continue their rehabilitation, their neurorehabilitation,
okay.
Because that's a big problem, of course. People end up getting really bored with what they're doing. It's typically these pencil and paper paradigms where it's like, cross off the D and it will show you like a huge section of like P's and D's or, you know, different letters that look really similar and you just have to cross off just the D's.
Uh-huh.
And what I took was all of these neuroscientific paradigms and with our team, I gamified them and made them really, really fun. And so, you know, you can utilize the rewards that you get just like in any other game to customize and further make that game world your own.
How are patients getting access to this, Fabiola? Like, do you sell this first to the hospitals and doctors first, and then they're the ones that suggest it to patients? Like, how does that work?
So we have a multitude of ways that we reach our clients. Organically is something that I'm very surprised about, is a lot of people reach out to us, specifically right now with long COVID. We did quite some studies with our software with long COVID. Seems that cognitive problems that happen with that are quite similar.
Mm-hmm.
And so organically, we've had a lot of people coming to us and asking how they can purchase our software. But we are primarily focused on business to business, a B2B model, where we provide the software. We don't provide the VR headsets, but we work with other distributors who make that easy and facilitate that and make sure that it's accessible to the clinicians. And then the software suite gets loaded on and there you go, voila. But our primary distributors are business, B2B to C, so business to consumer. I always hate using acronyms and not explaining because sometimes there's people that are like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyways, we have distribution partners, namely in the United States, because adoption rates there are far higher. And these individuals have a telehealth provider. They contact, and that telehealth provider is connected then to various amounts of physicians or occupational therapists or neurologists, whatever the case might be. And the really cool thing about our software is that you then get this clinical dashboard and viewer where you can schedule all of your patients' appointments remotely. And then you can also monitor their progress. So instead of getting a snapshot of what's happening with your patient, like you would in a normal setting, you're getting, we collect about 10,000 data points per minute. So you're getting as a clinician, and of course you're not like giving them all that, we're giving them analyzed data, but that shows what the patient is doing, if they're improving, if they're not. It also allows, clinicians to give like a little nudge to their patient if they're not utilizing their program. Uh-huh. The whole idea is then even the clinician can be in the game with them and helping them throughout their tasks. So the whole idea is that who doesn't love fun and games, like of all ages? And I really wanted to make something that was age appropriate because this is a problem for people that are very young as well as people that are very old. And I think that it's really nice then that everyone can kind of play. And in the future, I know that this is, I'm not going to get into the complexities of it, but we're collecting enough data and we've begun to develop our diagnostic tool, which allows for disease classification and early detection and prevention. So there's a lot that happens in this game. It seems when you look at it, just like a lovely, simple game, but yeah. On the back end, especially the clinicians, they're getting so much valuable information about their patients, which allows them to give personalized care and make sure that they're providing the best healthcare outcomes that they can.
Okay. So,
and I don't know if I mentioned our game is called Koji's Quest, right? And this is named after my doggies, my past doggy Mojo and my current dog Kenji, who are both Rottweilers, and Kenji's 65 kilograms of fun and thinks he's a lap dog.
65 kilograms. Okay. That may be fun to you, but to somebody like me, that means like a potential,
he's a sweetheart, honestly. I mean, he's protective, of course, but he's such a love bug. Like, all he wants to do is snuggle with you.
He's not a love bug. I once dated a woman that had a dog that was probably about 50 or 60 kilos, and that relationship didn't last long because the way that dog looked at me, oh man, it sent chills down my bones. And I knew
it's like he was literally dogging you. He was like, I'm going to check you out and I'm going to see what you're capable of doing. And if you're scared of me, I'm going to take advantage of it, Eric.
Oh, yeah. He like towed me in his own way. Like, I'm the man of the house, you know? This is...
That was Mojo. That was my other Rottweiler. He was much more of like a thug. And Kenji is like a big baby. He doesn't understand that he's large. So he just comes and sits on top of you. And you're like, please, like, I'm 50 kilos. You're 15 kilos than me. So let's maybe even this out a little bit.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, that thing, you probably look at him and think, hey, that thing could probably take on a small lion.
Seriously, though. So sorry, but side tangent.
Yeah. So listen, you said you got this, or 2017 is when you started NeuroReality. We're in 2023. Well, we're in 2023, and it hasn't been that long. And you've had tremendous success, what it seems like, because you have over, I guess, a couple of thousand patients are users, you know, of the technology. And it seems to be that you're in hospitals in the US and perhaps some other markets. How are you able to grow so successfully? Can you just kind of share some high level, you know, tips for other entrepreneurs out there who may be in the med tech space on some of the things that you did to achieve this? In my opinion, I think it's just rapid growth in a short amount of period for this kind of technology.
Thanks. So I think that probably the biggest thing that you have to look at, and having lived in so many countries gives me this really unique global perspective, is how to solve problems that are occurring on a global scale.
Okay.
And then actually making sure that your product is wanted. So in the beginning, in 2017, as I said, this was something people thought I was crazy. Like, it wasn't necessarily a great idea. Cool for your PhD research, go ahead. In terms of a product, that wasn't really there yet. The product market fit wasn't there. So when we talk about a product market fit, I'm talking about our consumers being ready to take up what we're creating. And it really was a lot of talking to, and well, of course, listening to, what did clinicians want? What did patients want? Doing a lot of these types of things helps you to understand the continuum of care as it currently is and how you can improve it, how you could save resources and in what way. And that was basically, I think that's the biggest tip that I can give. Also making sure that you have an overview of the regulations in every single country being very different and understanding that you can't just release a medical software immediately in Canada. It's close to the States, but of course, then you have to make some tweaks to the regulations. So just being very educated about what you're doing. And then lastly, you're going to hear no a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot, and you're going to fail a lot. And you take those, and those are lessons for you, and you keep moving and you keep growing. Because if you don't have those little bits of failures or hearing no, then you don't learn about why your product isn't being adopted or why it's not successfully growing in terms of the way you're scaling your business. I think it's really important for individuals to listen to what's happening around them and also understand that you don't have to be the brightest, the smartest, the best. It's a lot of tenacity that really plays into this. It's about who's going to stick in there the longest? Because believe me, there's been plenty of times where we weren't sure whether or not we were going to make it. And we have. So I'm very proud to say that that is largely also attributed to my team. I would not be here in any capacity whatsoever had it not been for having a great team behind me.
Okay. And that's a good segue into the initial question that I had asked. It was like, what was the inspiration behind Neural Reality? So if you could tell us about that before we head into the rapid section part of the interview.
Sure. So I had a really personal inspiration, a multitude of them, actually. I have a very rare neurological disorder. And so I actually utilize the software myself because I find it helpful. But the primary reason it really was sort of like heart tugger. That's okay. The word for that. Pulling on your heartstrings. There you go. All right.
A calling.
Heart tugger is going to be the new expression.
Okay.
My grandmother lived in rural British Columbia and she suffered a stroke. The hospital that served the area where she lived in served a catchment area of about 25,000 kilometers square. And for her to receive any type of specialized care, she would have to travel about 3 hours there and 3 hours back in order to get that care. So she would complain to her doctors, and me being at this point, baby neuroscientist, I really wish that I could have done more, because what she was complaining about to me are all telltale signs that she was having more strokes, which are often unnoticed, or TIAs, trans-ischemic attacks, mini strokes, that she was deteriorating. And this was not being recognized by her doctors. And she was deteriorating cognitively. That was the telltale sign. She didn't feel safe crossing the road anymore. She didn't feel safe taking public transportation. She didn't feel that she was capable of keeping track of things the way she used to. When I went to her home, you know, to pack up her belongings, you could see that she was making notes of things that she had to do in a very different way than the way that I know my Oma, my grandmother. And unfortunately, she passed away from a stroke that was so severe that it killed her. And this is not generally the case unless you have had a multitude of problems. So had we been remotely monitoring her, had we been able to know that there was already degradation happening and jump in an earlier phase, she may have been able to receive medical care that was not provided to her and that could have saved her life. So for me, that was the biggest inspiration. And I heard when I was at the University of Oxford, many similar stories from stroke survivors who were asking over and over, what can I do? My doctors aren't giving me any recommendations. Are there things that I can do? And a lot of them were gaming. So that was sort of my segue was, okay, we're going to make this into fun and games. Like I said, everybody loves fun and games.
Yeah. And for anyone listening, this touches very deeply, because sometimes you're thinking about maybe a business that you can create, or maybe it's a personal problem that you have. But in many occasions, like in your experience here, it's something that impacted somebody very close to you, you know, your grandmother.
Absolutely.
I had no intention many years ago of launching a nonprofit. Never thought I would not launch one, but I had some nieces that were very overweight, and I would take them to do different activities, and like swimming theme parks, and they were so overweight that, you know, the little tube they were in wouldn't even float. I mean, they were just too heavy. And that really inspired me to create like a nonprofit that tackled or tried to curb childhood obesity. Never thought I would launch anything like that. But again, it's close to your heart. It's tugging your heart. And it's something that you can't quiet. You can't silence it. It's like continuously almost nagging you, and you're thinking of solutions or trying to find out answers to solutions on how you can, you know, help solve this issue that's impacting lots of people. So for those that are listening, you know, just be aware that that could happen to you. And something could be
really
impacting somebody close to you,
Eric, for that. Yeah. You know, and it is, that's really the thing, is it's also not just the individual that is impacted. It's their friends, their family.
Yes.
Really, really get impacted by someone experiencing this because they want to help, but they don't know how.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Well, Fabiola, we've gotten to the next part of this interview here. This is our rapid questions. They don't think too hard about it. Just give me the first thing that pops in your mind. The first question is, would you rather have $25,000 cash or dinner with Natasha Bowman?
Cash, because I don't know who Natasha Bowman is.
She's a mental health and leadership and speaker that you follow on LinkedIn. So.
Sorry, Natasha.
Okay.
If you watch this.
All right. Here's a fill in the blank one for you. You wanted to be blank when you were a kid.
A scientist. I wrote in a journal when I was 8 years old, and it has never changed. I've always journaled that I was going to be a scientist.
All right. Good for you. What's the most interesting thing that you've done in the past 26 days, Fabiola?
Jesus. In the past 26 days.
Eating some turtles over there?
I'm like, what have I done that's exciting in 26 days? Nothing? No.
I was thinking maybe you ate some more turtles, but who knows?
I didn't eat any more turtles. I'm trying, like you said, I'm like trying to think like off the cuff, like what is the most exciting thing that I did? I know what it is. Duh. I'm like looking at it. I had a birthday party for Kenji, my dog, because I'm silly and weird and don't have human children yet. So that was probably the most exciting thing I did in the past 26 days, to be honest.
All right.
Work-life balance. Need to get that a little bit better.
Did he have a little party hat on? Did you celebrate with
totally. Him? He has a happy, like, that's why I'm like, I'm looking at it. He has like a happy birthday banner. This was last week. And he had enough treat to last him probably for like 2 months.
Okay.
And a whole birthday cake and all of that. So that was fun.
Any other dogs join the party? Like any friends of his or anything?
Yes, they didn't come over, but he has a lot of doggy friends in the neighborhood. It's really funny. I guess dogs are just as particular about who they like as we are as humans. And so he has his dog friends that he doesn't like in the neighborhood, those that he does. So he said hi to his dog friends and they chilled and they played ball together. You know,
that's
what you do when you're a dog.
That's so funny, but I'm imagining if I was single and I had a dog as a pet, and I would go to the park, and I was really interested in meeting this other person who was a dog owner, but my dog didn't like their dog, and I'd be talking to my dog like, "What's the matter with you? You know, go make friends with this other dog."
It can happen. There's a doggy in the neighborhood who's called Taco, and Kenji doesn't like Taco. They don't like each other, but I like his owner very much as a human being. He's just a very nice neighbor, so. It can happen, but No, that's not so exciting, Eric. I'm sorry. My life in the past, like 26 days has been fundraising, and fundraising is not fun.
Oh, I know all about that. Yeah, it definitely isn't fun. Next question for you. Before you run for president, you must destroy all of your evidence and involvement with blank.
Everything? Oh my God. Am I going to get started?
If it's everything, you've got a pretty exciting life. You've been pretty.
I have led a very exciting life. Don't Google me too far, because you'll see some stuff that is not. The media loves to represent things differently, and I'm not talking about if anyone Googles me. I was involved heavily in the Me Too movement, but I'm not talking about that. There were some precarious things that happened in my past. For example, being arrested in Vanuatu. And nearly dying in prison from dengue fever. That's like a whole like other story and episode in and of itself.
Hey, you're my first convict on the show. Not bad.
Maybe not. Maybe they were just too shy to tell you.
No, and you give this impression like you're this very proper lady, you know, very sophisticated and classy and intelligent. But look at you, you're a convict.
This is I wish that I could say that I had done anything more smart given the circumstances, but we were on a mega yacht, and it's very typical in these smaller countries, these smaller island nations. I was working in geopolitics at the time, and they like to extort money from individuals with great sums of money because they're, you know, it's a really, really poor country. So I unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know how you want to say it, unfortunately, had the guts to go up against all of these officers with machine guns and sniper rifles pointed at us and telling us to get up off on the board, like on the top of the deck, and surrender, excuse me, our cell phones and passport. And I told them that this was an act of piracy. Unless they got off our yacht, then, and I'm on the phone with the U.S. Embassy and I'm an American. And this is the only time like I was proud to like have that American passport because my dad's Egyptian, my mom's German, and I was just born there. Uh-huh. But I'm like, you guys can't mess with us. And I was then charged with obstruction of justice.
Oh,
so, because I simply asked for a warrant with friendly island relations, within an hour and a half, a warrant was produced.
Mm. Okay. And previously you mentioned you went to jail, and I think you said Guanajuato. Did you mean Guanajuato, Mexico, or
Vanuatu, where it's, so it's in the South Pacific. It's beside Fiji. So Fiji, Tuvalu, Tonga, it's sort of like all in that area, Papua New Guinea.
Got you. All right. Last question for you. Instead of flowers for Valentine's Day, Yola, you would rather receive blank.
Honey. Obsessed with honey. Okay. I love tea. Okay. So tea and honey, actually.
All right.
You're gonna like win me over if you show up with some different types of honey, but like local honey, you know, not like that store-bought stuff that they feed sugar to the bees, like proper honey.
Oh yeah. Here in Romania, you see proper honey all the time on, you know, when you travel to the next city, there are people selling it on the side of the road. Oh, it's proper. And you see like parts of the honeycomb in the jar. Yeah.
It's amazing. I would just go crazy. Are you in Bucharest?
Yeah, I'm in Bucharest. I like putting honey on my yogurt. That, to me, that's like, I love that.
Greek yogurt style. It's amazing.
All right. So honey instead of flowers. Faviola, thank you for being on Innovators Can Laugh. Where can people learn more about you?
So they can check me out on my LinkedIn profile, of course, website, which is www.neuro-reality.com. Yeah. And then shameless plug, because it is what it is to be a woman, and I don't shy away from it. On Instagram, you can find me at Neuroscience Barbie. So it's, you know, it's a little bit of a nod to my past life working as a model and all things I did there.
Very cool. All right. Thank you so much. And to everybody listening, think about how inspired you feel right now from Faviola's story. Imagine you had missed out on her story. So if you haven't already, give that subscribe button a push. And until next week, I will chat with you then. This is Eric signing off. Thank you. I love Fabiola's enthusiasm for life, aka Neuroscience Barbie on Instagram. She has these amazing globe-hopping adventures. She's a lecturer at BU Amsterdam and is the founder of MedTech company that helps people who have had an acquired brain injury. If you want to learn more about Fabiola, go to neuroreality.com. Links to all of this are in the show notes and in the ICO newsletter. Thank you to Fabiola for being on the show. If you like this episode, send me a note on LinkedIn and subscribe on Apple or Spotify and tell others about it. Cheers.